You're listening to a 95 BFM podcast.
You're tuned into The Wire. 1 hour of current affairs and analysis starting now.
Tēnā koutou katoa, ko Jemima Houston tōku ingoa, nō mai haere mai ki te wire mō tēnei rā. Kia ora and welcome to The Wire for Tuesday the 20th of April. My name is Jemima and I'm your host and I'm joined in studio by producer Lyric. How's it going?
I'm good, how are you?
Good, good. Me and Lyric were just talking earlier about the fact that in the winter months, the white wall that exists in front of our window is even more sad than it normally is, knowing that outside it's a little cold and dreary as well.
Very grim.
Yeah, not very nice. And the shaking over the last couple of days due to the construction, which apparently you can't hear through the radio, which is awesome, but we feel it and it's pretty full on over here. But anyway, we have a really awesome show coming up for you today. Ifai Akine. Lyric spoke to Dr. Elizabeth Kirikiri of the Green Party about the need for an independent Māori health authority. And then I looked into the government's $100 million plus deal with tech giant Amazon. I speak to National Party spokesperson for economic development, Todd McClay, New Zealand film producer, John Barnett, and Green Party spokesperson on economic development, Chloe Swarbrick. We touch on each of their positions on the deal, the impact the deal will have on New Zealanders' employment in the film and television industry, and also the potential problems that could arise between Amazon's reputation for the poor treatment of workers' unions and workers' rights, as well as New Zealand's Hobbit Law, which has left all those working in the film industry as independent contractors without the same protections of employees or rights to unionise. He aho whakaro, we would love to hear your thoughts on any of these pieces. So tuku pātui mai, you can send us through a text on 5395 or Wai Mai Rane, give us a call in studio on 309 3879. Also, after the show, kowea e wariwari e ahi ana koutou te whakarongo ki e nei kōrero anō he pakihiri rokiroki maronga i te pai, tukutuku o irarangi poho, me haere ki 95BFM irakati.com. You can catch all of these stories and more by podcast on the 95BFM website, 95BFM.com. Head up to the right of the page and click BCasts, click The Wire. We're there and you'll be able to catch up with everything we've covered over the last little while. But anyway, let's crack into the show.
Kei te whakarongo koe ki te wire, marunga irirangi pō.
The Wire.
On average, Māori live 7 years less than non-Māori. Māori are also nearly twice as likely to die from cancer than non-Māori. Māori women with breast cancer are 75% more likely to die from their condition than non-Māori. While Māori mothers and babies suffer higher mortality rates than non-Māori, and Māori in their 60s and 70s are twice as likely to die from COVID-19. This morning, RNZ published a report which found young Māori aged between 15 and 18 were more likely to die in the first 30 days following a major traumatic incident than non-Māori in the same age group. These are just a handful of troubling statistics which display major disparities between Māori health outcomes in comparison to non-Māori in Aotearoa. For years, Māori advocates and health professionals have been calling for an overhaul or review of our health system to figure out how Māori can be equally served rather than failed. Tomorrow, Health Minister Andrew Little will be announcing major changes to our nation's health system. Among these changes is the possibility of a new Māori health authority, a system change the Labour government promised during their election campaign last year. According to News Hub, Mr. Little will be deciding between an independent authority, which could have its own commissioning abilities separate from the Ministry of Health, or a Crown entity that will consult with Māori. Either option will need an iwi partnership board. The Māori Party's Debbie Rewa Packer has already claimed a Crown entity will fail and a Māori health authority that is independent is crucial. However, National MP Shane Reti has claimed positive changes can be made without needing to form an independent entity. This morning I spoke with Dr. Elizabeth Kirikiri of the Green Party, who are calling for an empowered independent Māori health authority. Dr. Kirikiri and I discussed why the Greens and other leaders are calling for an independent system, the unique health issues impacting Māori, and pre-colonial Māori beliefs and practices of health, among other issues. What do you imagine an empowered, independent Māori health authority would look like? How do you think it would operate?
I imagine an independent Māori health authority would bring the best of our Māori expertise to the table, that all of the successful things that Māori-led organisations have done around this country will come to bear, and we will be able to reframe and really start fresh with a kaupapa Māori, a treaty-based framework of how we do what needs to be done to actually improve our Māori health, because we see it across the country. Māori health improves when Māori are in charge. Māori education improves when Māori are in charge. The difficulty, of course, is that successive governments cannot cope with Māori being in charge. They find to have a Māori director, a Māori manager, but they can't just say, here's all the resources, you do what's best for your people. But I hope that that's what this one will be, that we have the resources to do things our way, and then we know it'll work.
Well, there's plenty of shocking statistics on Māori health outcomes already, and this morning RNZ reported that young Māori are more likely to die following hospitalisation for significant trauma than non-Māori. Why is our current system failing so much to do the best for Māori?
It's failing because it's still based on an old colonial structure that was never ever made for us, that in fact was designed to harm us and marginalise us. So when different governments tinker around with it and try to do little bits and pieces here and there, it still has no result. I'm on the House Select Committee in Parliament, and we review all of the DHBs, the MOH, every health agency in this country, and no matter what they do, they say they want to help Māori, they want to reduce disparities, but very little actually works. And when it comes right down to it, and we say to them, how much money is spent per Māori patient, per non-Māori? In almost every single case across the country, more money is spent on non-Māori. If we have the opportunity to say, here's our money, we, at the very least, we should have control of. This is the different way that we will do this. All of the statistics are bad. However, we see glimmer of light all over the country with people doing incredible things. And I want to shout out to all our rongoā, our miri-miri practitioners, people that use our plants, our old ways of doing things to heal our people. There should be an absolute big space for that, and that expertise and bringing back what our people used to know. Things around food sovereignty, our people knowing how to plant, how to feed ourselves, and moving away from processed food and the things that harm us in this lifestyle. I think there's so much potential, and it requires some letting go from government. It's as long as we're controlled by the Ministry of Health, which has failed in every single respect, then it's likely that the new health authority will, if not fail, will nowhere near to reach the heights of what it claims it wants to do. That's why it should be independent.
Would you like to see the new Māori Health Authority incorporate practices for helping people suffering from mental health conditions as well as physical health conditions?
It's everything. I absolutely am committed to Mason Jury's model of the Whare Tapawha, that our health is not one-dimensional. It's spiritual, it's our hinengaro, it's our whānau, and it's our tinana. So the physical is always only one part of our health. All of those things blend together. And when we keep trying to separate our mental health from the rest of our health, we separate it from whānau, and we separate it from the things affecting us, like having somewhere to live and creating a sensible income, that creates a problem. And I think for Māori, that our waitu is such a core part of who we are, then always separating it out like it's not connected to everything else is always going to be a problem. So I would hope that a new health authority blends those things back together and sees us as the whole person, the whole people that we are, and the strengths that we bring.
And what do we know about Māori health practices pre-colonisation?
some things have been handed down, and I think our rongoā practitioners are the ones helping to bring that back. But what we know from all the reports is we are strong, healthy people. The diaries of colonisers, of the reports that were made, is we were sturdy and we were strong and healthy. We ate our own food that we grew, that we hunted for, although, you know, hunting is pretty much reserved to fishing and catching birds, pre-introduction of exotic species, that we lived within our means. We did not have cash. We did not have processed food. So all of those, we did not have any form of alcohol, one of the few peoples in the world, which is why alcohol continues to have such a huge impact on us. I'm sure it wasn't paradise, because, you know, it's work. It was hard work to be able to feed your people, but we started off strong, and we had no resilience to Pākehā diseases and lifestyles. It looks like we still very much don't.
There will be a number of people who will criticise a new Māori health authority, will say that there's, I suppose, a kind of...
Special treatment.
Special treatment, yes, that's the one. That's what I'm looking for. But we know that Māori are facing, as you say, more unique issues that Pākehā or non-Māori are facing. Westernised diets, westernised styles of living. So it's crucial for us to have an independent health system. Is that right?
That is what I'm saying. There's always going to be people who think that Māori having being able to live and live good lives means it's special treatment. There's always going to be racists out there who think that we're getting special treatment just because we're getting, for example, any of the settlements, which is a tiny, tiny percentage of what our people are due, and that amounts to nothing compared to what has been taken from us. I like to think that more and more non-Māori are becoming aware of what the truth is. I hope that when we can start teaching the real history of this country in schools, that people will actually grow up knowing the truth, and there will be less and less of that. When every child in this country grows up speaking Māori, it will shift things fundamentally in that country. In the meantime, we've got a few generations of people whose privilege allows them to look down on Māori, look down on beneficiaries, as if being poor is an indictment in and of itself. And they'll still be there, but gradually new generations will grow up having a bit more idea of what the truth is in this country, and then they'll see that the views of their parents, their grandparents, were actually not correct.
Tomorrow, Andrew Little will be announcing significant changes to our health system. According to News Hubs, Little will be announcing a Māori health authority that will either be totally independent or a crown entity. Why is it not preferable for the new health authority to be a crown entity?
As long as it's a crown entity, non-Māori are in charge of it. If in fact Māori ministers are in charge of it, if there's only Māori people running it, I might have some hope that it'll work. But as long as they answer to the MOH, and the MOH and this government has the right to tell them what to do and can override decisions, as we have seen Māori experts putting advice into all of these discussions, have been overridden. So long as this is actually some way independent, that Māori are actually in charge, then I will be hopeful of how well it's going to do. As long as non-Māori are in charge and think they know what's best for Māori, because that is that same colonial, paternalistic attitude that they've had since they got here, as long as they keep doing that, Māori will continue to die younger, will have worse reactions to any disease that comes along, and we will have to keep fighting. But certainly the Greens, certainly me as our health spokesperson, will just keep fighting. So I'm hoping for the best, but I'm not holding my breath.
That was Green Party MP Dr. Elizabeth Kerikeri talking with me about Māori health issues in Aotearoa and the possibility of an independent Māori health authority.
Thank you so much, Lyric. You tuned into The Wire on 95BFM. Send us a text. Tell us how you're going. Tell us what you think of the last piece. We will be right back after a short break. Here is Night Nurse by Gregory Isaacs.
Try your best just to make it quick. Pour my tin to the sick. Cause there must be something she can do. This heart is broken in two. Tell her it's a case of emergency. There's a patient by the name of Gregory. Night nurse. Only you alone can quench the setters. I need attendance from my nurse around the clock. Cause there's no prescription for me. She's the one, the only remedy.
Tried cannabis or just canna curious? Come to J-Day, a free annual community event celebrating Kiwi cannabis culture and protesting against prohibition. Learn about CBD and medical cannabis, get involved with reform efforts and enjoy the music, market stalls and more. It's never been more important to make your voice heard for fair and sensible cannabis laws in Aotearoa. J-Day, Saturday, May 1st at Albert Park, high noon till 4:20.
R18 Zero Waste Event, no dogs or glass. Presented by Normal with support from the Hemp Store on K Road.
The majestic wonders of the ancient world. The pyramids at Giza. The cunning riddle of the Sphinx.
But now one ancient secret has been solved by the good people at Bread and Butter.
Their ancient grain sourdough uses heritage cereals, Khorasan, spelt and sorghum, and follows the age-old method of sourdough fermentation dating back to ancient Egypt. So it's great for your gut, tastes delicious, and is better for the planet. Ancient grain sourdough at Bread and Butter, Grey Lynn, Ponsonby, and the Coast Plaza in Whangaparoa. Order online at breadandbutter.nz.
Thanks a lot.
Play some Chili.
I don't know if we...
Play some Slayer.
Yeah, all right, hold your horses. Okay, this one's called Raining Blood.
One, two, three.
95BFM's Jukebox Parlour is taking all your requests. And we know you have requests. Jukebox Parlour with Sue. Hey, hey, hey.
Got a devil's haircut.
Jukebox Parlour with Song. Saturday, 7 to 9 pm, only on 95BFM.
America.
Kei te whakarongo koe ki te Wire, marunga irirangi pō.
The Wire.
You're tuned into The Wire on 95BFM with Jemima and Lyric. For the next story for the Tuesday Wire, I am looking at the deal made by the government with tech giant Amazon. Over the last few days, there has been significant coverage of the deal made by the New Zealand government with global tech giant Amazon for their Lord of the Rings television production currently being filmed in New Zealand. Under a memorandum of understanding, Amazon will receive an extra 5% from the screen production grant in addition to the 20% grant the television series has already qualified for. What this means is that as an international production, Amazon's Lord of the Rings television series can receive a 20% qualifying New Zealand production expenditure grant, whereas domestic productions can get a 40% qualifying New Zealand production expenditure grant. However, the domestic grant is capped at $6 million, whereas the international grant is capped at $25 million. International productions may also be eligible for an additional 5% uplift to this 20% grant if they meet criteria such as providing value to New Zealand. Amazon has been given that 5% uplift by the New Zealand government. Amazon has plans to spend around $650 million on season one of the Lord of the Rings television series, making it eligible for a tax rebate of over $160 million. Filming for the television series was interrupted by COVID-19, but resumed in New Zealand late last year. And there have been concerns about why the government has pushed more money into the production, despite it already being underway on our shores. There are also significant concerns about how this might impact the domestic film and television industry and why the government has chosen to put the money with a global giant rather than use the money in the domestic film and television sector, particularly in a COVID-19 world. The National Party is for the move, particularly in response to the work that they did regarding the Lord of the Rings films and the Hobbit films being filmed in New Zealand a few years ago. I spoke to their economic development spokesperson, Todd McClay, about the latest move by the New Zealand government in terms of Amazon. We began by talking about what the National Party's position is on the new deal.
Well, it's much more than a $100 million plus funding boost, and so we're calling on the Minister to release all the advice he's had from Treasury about the benefit not only to New Zealanders but also to the economy from giving Amazon additional support. The scheme itself is a very good one. You might remember that it was a national government that put it in place so that the Lord of the Rings films would continue to be made here. It meant that there were about 10,000 jobs in the film sector or industry were saved. They were about to be lost. So that worked very, very well. But the minister seems to have decided to give Amazon more support or a lot more money at a time when the government's borrowing so very much. So I think it's very important we see that there is an equal benefit to New Zealand in the economy because Amazon had actually already committed to be making these programs here. I know the sector themselves are wondering why it's happened. So the minister should release all of the advice so that, you know, New Zealanders can assess for themselves whether it was necessary and it's a good use of taxpayer money.
Because I think that is the relevant thing, is how much money that feels like. You know, $100 million in a time where we're still living through huge economic fallout due to the COVID-19 pandemic, and then funding a business where the founder is the richest person in the world. I can imagine for people working in the film and television industry in New Zealand and making locally produced content would probably be feeling a little bit miffed about that.
Well, that's right. I've certainly seen and read that, but I think it's more than that. I see in the papers today somebody who has a company, a New Zealand-owned company, where they're designing and want to launch very soon an interactive game, said they just can't get enough graphic designers or programmers in New Zealand, and what this means is it's going to be even harder for them to do so. You know, the New Zealand company doesn't get government support, but one from overseas does. Look, the film industry is very important, and so the scheme we put in place was measured based upon advice from Treasury, and it did mean that those 10,000 jobs were saved, and we have seen other films come here. That's why I'm calling on the Minister to release the advice. Look, if there is good advice and it stacks up, then it's worth considering. But I think I saw in the last few days him say that he didn't give any advice from Treasury, and you know, tourist agencies and others said it would be quite good for New Zealand. Well, it's a lot of money not to get advice, you know, to spend on behalf of the taxpayer.
Now, that point about a production company was saying that there's just not enough skills in New Zealand, perhaps, to fill the gaps within the film industry. Shouldn't we perhaps be putting that huge sum of money into film and television skills and resources, and have New Zealanders creating content that can be put overseas rather than having a big international company come in and earn the money that comes out of that?
I think the point the man who has a New Zealand company was making is it's just created unfair competition. There's always going to be a little bit of time where we don't have the skill or the experience that's needed, and we need to be competitive. When the borders open, I know a lot of people around the world would like to choose New Zealand as a place to come and live and bring those skills. At the same time, we want to train more New Zealanders to be able to do that. And I think that's been underway for some time, long before Labor came to the government. The point here, though, is it's about competition and fairness. If we want movies to be made in New Zealand, many countries of the world will often offer some sort of support. In this case, what the government's done is decided to give even more support after a decision had been made for the movies to be made here. Amazon had already committed, and I guess what the New Zealand sector is saying is that's unfair competition because they don't have any, and now it's going to be harder for them to do the job they want to as New Zealand companies because they're having to compete with these, you know, companies from overseas for the labour, whilst the government's giving them a lot more money.
Yeah, exactly. I can imagine that's probably quite frustrating, particularly in COVID times. I suppose another issue that has been brought up, the way that we've seen previously with Lord of the Rings being filmed and The Hobbit being filmed in New Zealand, that it brought a lot of film tourism and an attraction to New Zealand. But borders are closed. We can only bring Australians over here at the moment. So how do you think that argument for tourism and the economic benefit for tourism in terms of this Lord of the Rings television production by Amazon, how do you think that argument really stands in a COVID-19 world?
Well, look, at some stage the border will be open. I see in America half the population have been vaccinated already. I think I saw this morning the UK, 10 million British people have had their second vaccination. So the world is getting on with vaccinating probably a lot more quickly than we are. At some stage, the government is going to have to make decisions about how to open the border and under what conditions. And I actually think they should be talking about that now, so that Mann, who owns a New Zealand company, can be thinking about where he might get those workers he needs if he can't compete against Amazon because Stuart Nash gave him so much money.
Just talking as well about the scheme that was put in place by the national government and sort of in relation to that, there have been points made, particularly by the Green Party, that Amazon has a bad reputation when it comes to supporting unions and supporting workers' rights. And in terms of the scheme that was put in place back in the national government for the filming of The Hobbit with the Hobbit Law and making film industry people as contractors rather than employees, how do you think that balance could sort of be discussed when it comes to, you know, this issue with Amazon, and then now already people in the film industry feeling like their rights are not as equal as they possibly should be?
Well, look, no, the Greens aren't right in that respect. I mean, I think they probably back then were being a little bit political. They were in opposition as Labor was jumping up and down. Labor and the Greens and the last government said they were going to fix it, and they made some minor changes, but they didn't actually. They left it as very much as it was. The film sector itself said that largely they were supportive of the regime that we put in place, and the reason for that is they would have jobs, and without a touch of flexibility, they wouldn't have any at all. And look, I understand, and I hear the argument that, well, you know, everyone in this situation, could or should be an employee. But ultimately, if we look at from many other countries around the world, the regime we put in place in New Zealand is a pretty good one. It gives people guarantees and gives them certainty, but it means the jobs are there rather than going somewhere else. Amazon has to treat workers in New Zealand the same as everybody else. They fall under New Zealand law, and we were very clear about that when we put these regimes in place, there's a New Zealand law. Amazon, at least as far as we were concerned, or any other company, had to adhere to all employment law in New Zealand. And my understanding is it has worked fairly well because those 10,000 jobs were saved, and so the people that got to continue to work on the Hobbit programs and movies and so on were gainfully employed.
That was Todd McClay from the National Party speaking on the $100 million plus deal between the government and Amazon. I then wanted to speak to a New Zealand film industry expert to hear their thoughts on the government's move, particularly as part of the deal made with Amazon is that there will be senior people from Amazon come to New Zealand for research and development purposes and to see what we have to offer in the film and TV industry area. I spoke to John Barnett, who is a well-renowned New Zealand film producer. John has produced productions such as Sione's Wedding, Whale Rider and White Lies, among many, many other productions. I wanted to speak to John about what his thoughts were on a relationship between New Zealand and Amazon and a potentially ongoing one, and whether he thinks that the film industry in New Zealand will be undercut by a relationship such as this. I began by asking John to state his position on the Amazon deal.
Well, I think it's a good thing. And there's a funny view of the world that Jerry Brownlee used to suggest. And he said that with regard to the international incentive scheme, he said, you give me a dollar, I give you back 20 cents, which it was at the time. I've got 80 cents I didn't have before. So from a macro sense, from New Zealand's point of view, he's right. And all around the world, people are trying to attract production of this scale to their countries. So, you know, I think we're in a competitive market, but the fact is the net result to New Zealand is favourable, very favourable.
So part of the deal with Amazon is that Amazon will send a senior team to New Zealand to look at other opportunities with focus on research and development. What are your thoughts on this for the future of filmmaking and productions in New Zealand?
Well, I think that's a good thing because they're going to be here for a number of years with Lord of the Rings. So, you know, if they send a team down, I don't think that team can go home after the first look and say, we've had a look, but there's nothing, you know, nothing to do here, because they actually want to keep these relationships running. Well, they want to keep them running, I would have thought, for a long, long time, but they certainly want to make sure that during production, everything runs very, very smoothly. So I think they will look to expand their operation here. Now, does that mean that they're going to be a funder of art house content or first filmmaker content? Most probably not, but I don't think that that's the issue. I mean, at the moment, what we've got is an industry, particularly in the film industry, which is actually highly dependent on government funding and highly dependent on the doorway of the Film Commission. And so if there's more resource and more finance available and more outlets available because somebody of Amazon size has set up an operation like that here, then that's only good for the people who are creating content.
Now, just on that, the National Party is concerned that this deal could lead to other film and TV makers to ask for the same level of increased government subsidies or they'll walk or stop production. Do you think that this is something New Zealand film and TV makers could do?
No. first of all, I don't think the National Party is right about that because there's the New Zealand Screen Production Grant International, which is a 20% scheme, and then there's a process called the additional 5% uplift, and that has been granted already on three or four occasions. Now, in the past, those have been identifiable things like the building of tanks for water work or promotion of a certain region or whatever it is. But the amount and the project have been finite. So the scale of the 5% is completely measurable, and you can see what the benefits are against the granting of the 5%. So I think that one of the ironies of the Amazon deal is that when you come up with something that's of the scale that they're contemplating for Lord of the Rings, which is a multi-year, multi-season multi-series. You know, anybody else is going to find it hard to match the scale of that. And as a consequence, it's going to be hard for them to thump the table and say, we demand exactly the same unless they come up with something that's so clearly beneficial to New Zealand. And from the domestic point of view, domestic filmmakers get a 40% rebate. So I don't think they're going to complain at all about the difference between the two grants. So, you know, I think the criteria, which was introduced in 2014 by the national government, with MB all over them, were pretty robust. We're pretty robust, and I think that the results have been measurable, and with few exceptions, I don't think there's anything to get excited about. I think everybody benefits from it.
So the concerns that have been hit around through the media over the last few days that this is potentially stripping opportunities from film and TV makers based here in New Zealand creating locally local stories is not necessarily something to be too worried about?
I wouldn't have thought so at all. I mean, I don't believe that for a moment. If you look at the crew list of people who are involved, for instance, in Lord of the Rings, there are very few New Zealand heads of department in season one. I'm expecting by season two, and certainly season three, you'll find a lot more. But isn't New Zealand producers, directors, writers, heads of department who are going to be put into the Lord of the Rings production? They're all still free. People are free to create whatever they want. And there's still a New Zealand On Air, New Zealand Film Commission, as funding bodies, and there's still a 40% rebate, and there's still, you know, all these incentives to support local production, which will remain to the same degree that they have in the past. So I don't see, you know, how anybody is going to be disadvantaged.
Now, just going back to a point you made right in the beginning, we talked a little bit about the fact that it's a competitive market for, you know, filmmakers and production companies wanting to set up productions in different countries. And I suppose particularly at the moment with COVID-19, New Zealand is perhaps seen as a good place to send your production company and create your film or television series. Do you think that with this Amazon deal that Amazon sort of got the market in that big production sense, or do you think that there'll be other larger tech companies that, you know, produce television series or films that will also be looking at New Zealand as a potential place to film their TV shows or films?
I think that people make decisions about where they're going to locate based on a number of factors, and the fact is one of the really significant factors is Lord of the Rings is very much seen as a New Zealand property. And thank you, Peter Jackson. And, you know, they know it can be shot here. And when you consider that the negotiations on this have been taking place right throughout the whole COVID crisis, and at a time when there was no travel and when there was, you know, no capacity to accommodate people here and all of those things, Amazon took a view that would change at some point. And so I don't think that there's anybody who's going to wake up this morning in Britain or Europe or the US and say, oh, we must go to New Zealand and we'll be there tomorrow, because it doesn't work like that. There's years, months and years of planning. So I don't think there's going to be a sudden influx of people.
You did say, you know, Lord of the Rings has its New Zealand stamp on it now, and obviously that has had a significant influence on the tourism industry here in the past.
Yep.
Do you think that we can continue to hold on to that, come to New Zealand because we're the place where Lord of the Rings is filmed for much longer? Do you think that that is something the film industry can hang on to?
Oh, I think absolutely, and I think regardless of whether the Amazon project went ahead, I think that's a theme that would have had at least another 10 to 15 years or longer to run as part of promotion, because you've got a generation of people who were teenagers when the first content came out, who, as they mature and, you know, have travel aspiration plans for their families or whatever, you know, would continue to come. But I think that actually what the revival of the brand is going to do is give it at least another 10 to 15 years, because it's a multi-part series. It's going to run over a number of years on a channel that, or on a platform that millions of people see. And so it will continue to be something that we can attach to in terms of promotion of the country.
That was John Barnett, a well-renowned New Zealand film producer, speaking on the Amazon deal with the government. John thinks that the deal is a good thing. However, it is important to state that there are people in the film industry here in Aotearoa that disagree. New Zealand Filmmakers Collective founder Richard Turner told RNZ that the deal is a double-edged sword. Like John, he said that the relationship with Amazon could create huge opportunities, but he questioned why the government wasn't using these millions of dollars to support New Zealand film and television content. He told RNZ, quote, "The majority of us filmmakers feel as though the government and funding bodies are doing the bare minimum to allow filmmakers to create content, especially feature films," end quote. Finally, the Green Party has spoken out against the Labor government's $100 million plus deal with tech giant Amazon. The Green Party economic development spokesperson, Chloe Swarbrick, has voiced her concerns about New Zealand getting into bed with a huge international company to build a wider relationship between New Zealand and the Amazon group. She has also raised contempt with Amazon's reputation for union busting and poor treatment of workers. This is what made me think about New Zealand's Hobbit Law, which I spoke about earlier with National Party's Todd McClay. For those who don't know, the Hobbit Law was introduced by the National Government when The Hobbit was being filmed in New Zealand. What it means is that the term employee legally excludes anybody working in the film industry, specifically classifying them instead as independent contractors. As independent contractors, film workers are unable to unionise and aren't afforded the same protections or benefits as regular employees. This was particularly interesting to me in terms of what Chloe was bringing up about Amazon's reputation for union busting and poor treatment of workers. So I wanted to talk to Chloe about that as well. I began by asking, though, for Chloe Swarbrick to state her opinion or state the Green Party's thoughts on the Amazon deal.
So it's really important to, I guess, lay out first and foremost that this deal does have with it some really strong requirements for domestic jobs. So it's anticipated that there'll be about 600 New Zealanders who are employed within the film industry over the next several plus years, so long as this project is filmed in New Zealand. I guess where the concerns for the Greens come into it is, firstly, noting that the subsidy for this project could, you know, chalk up to $1 billion over the next few years, is a question looming of whether it could have been spent better on stimulating particularly domestic films, telling our own stories on screen and getting all the more New Zealanders involved. But the far more insidious side of this, from what I can see, particularly digging through documents now, is the fact that we are looking to and actually have inked the deal on a memorandum of understanding for closer ties and a closer relationship with Amazon, particularly if you look at the kind of 4 points that are outlined as KPIs or kind of key performance indicators for ministry officials when they were working through negotiating this document. They include things like creating kind of speeches and masterclasses that are to be run by those who work within Amazon, but also to investigate other forms of so-called entrepreneurship or innovation within the country. And there, I think, raises a real big potential issue with regard to who owns the intellectual property, but also the fact that we are getting into bed with a company that is not particularly well-renowned, in fact, far the opposite of that, for its labour kind of its health and safety, for its respect to its workers. We've had some really nightmarish stories over the past several years of union busting and of those who are on the production line wearing the likes of adult diapers. And when we're inviting a company like that onto our shores to continue to engage in a closer and stronger relationship, I think it is beholden that we have all the more parliamentary and public scrutiny than what has occurred so far.
Now, I just wanted to go to right at the very beginning, what you talked about is the job opportunities that a relationship with Amazon in the film industry in New Zealand could have. Now, that has been a comment that's been made, that there'll be more employment opportunities, perhaps, with a big production company planning to film here for the next, you know, number of years. Do you think that there is a concern when it comes to worker rights in terms of these issues that you've also raised with Amazon and their history of problems with worker rights when it comes to the Hobbit Law and workers in the film industry being considered contractors and having lesser rights than those who are employees?
110%. And this is where actually it gets pretty difficult. So, you know, you've used actually the perfect example there. When you open your doors to these kinds of massive financial subsidies, we are not playing with kind of small companies. And I think it's really important for New Zealand officials and for politicians not to get all starry-eyed and caught up in the fact that, oh, they want to come here and do this here. In fact, we need to really keep our eye on what are the benefits for New Zealand, and particularly for New Zealanders, when, you know, the broader context is that we have seen the highest rates of inequality growth that we've seen in generations in this country. So just, I guess, to really point out what we're talking about here, what is outlined in the deal is that 90% of the crew would come from New Zealand and 20% of the lead and supporting cast would come from New Zealand. And I know that Actors Equity would like to have something to say about how we should be moving towards something more akin to, I believe it's the Australian model, where we have at least one of the lead actors being a New Zealander, which in turn generates, you know, further potential economic benefit, etc. But to your point around how this kind of financial relationship then opens the door to influence on legislation in particular, there is massive concern. And when we're talking about a company like Amazon with the history that it has, it's very recent history, you know, only a few weeks ago that union busting behaviour was found to be very explicit in the States. What we are looking at and what we are talking about is something that deserves a huge spotlight on it. So I am concerned when it comes to those Hobbit laws in particular and the work that's been done to peel them back somewhat from the implementation of the former national government has been led by my colleague Jan Logie, who is our spokesperson on workers' rights. But we didn't manage to get them to go far enough. And that's where I think it's important for folks to know where different political parties sat on the spectrum of how we can ensure the best possible outcomes here, because the Greens were looking to completely repeal them. But what we managed and what we ended up with, by virtue of the three parties in government, and obviously the opposition being National, who were very supportive of keeping them in place given that they originally put them there, was a kind of halfway house. And, you know, for some within the film industry, they were happy with that because they see that there is a trade-off to be made about keeping these jobs in New Zealand and with these grants that are available internationally as well. And that's, again, where I believe it's really important that we are focusing on not engaging in what feels sometimes like quite a race to the bottom. That is, we look at what these grants are that are and subsidies that are available overseas. We're not particularly reflecting on the value that we bring to the table. I mean, one of the many things that's raised within this Amazon deal and Lord of the Rings before it is our landscape and our unique kind of skill sets, which, you know, created the foundation for the Wizard Workshop in particular. But we end up instead focusing on how much money we can give to lure these massive organisations, these massive companies with kind of a centrifugal force, a GDP larger than our entire country, onto our shores. And, you know, we're playing with fire there.
That was Green Party Economic Development spokesperson Chloe Swarbrick speaking on the Green Party's position on the government's multi-million dollar deal with tech giant Amazon. In this piece, I also spoke with National Party spokesperson for economic development, Todd McClay, and New Zealand film producer John Barnett about this complex issue that brings up a number of economic and moral issues. We've had a few texts in which I want to just quickly run over because we're running out of time, but I think they explain the number of different takes drinks you can have on the deal. Somebody texted in and said that they've been working in film for 15 years and that local projects are underpaid and exploitative. They say that they breathe a sigh of relief every time they book a gig on an international show because they know we'll have enough staff, decent working conditions and proper wages. Somebody has also texted in saying no one likes Amazon, but all that money doesn't exist without them, and you can't find it somewhere else. So it brings up a number of different issues, but I'm going to stop talking because we're running into Jen's show.
That was The Wire.
That was the Tuesday Wire for another week. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in and listening and sending your texts and giving us a call. Always really appreciate hearing what you've got to say about the latest news and current events. It's awesome. Thank you very much, Lyric, for being a wonderful producer. Always appreciate it. Yeah, and have a lovely afternoon out there. Thank you again. Another big thank you, obviously, to the people who spoke with us today. We really appreciate the time that all these experts give us. It's awesome, and yeah, have a good day out there. And up next is Jen with the 1 to 4.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.